Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Let's break down the public statement by acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney that no one could believe he actually made. Call it a confession, if you'd like. We'll play some clips and parse the language with our guest, Washington Post investigations reporter Rosalind Helderman. Hi, Rosalind. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Mulvaney actually said, plain as day, right out in the open, that getting Ukraine to investigate the Democrats was one of the reasons that the Trump administration withheld military aid to Ukraine. Admitting to that quid pro quo was so unexpected that a reporter, I think this is Jonathan Carl from ABC, asked an incredulous follow-up question.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that he ordered to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. And that is absolutely appropriate.
And there, as you heard, Mulvaney admitted it again. And yes, that was Jonathan Carl. We'll play more excerpts in a second. But Rosalind, was that a first? And could people in the Washington Post newsroom, if you can talk about what goes on in your newsroom, believe your ears?
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty stunning moment. You know, from the start of this whole Ukraine thing, and it's only been a few weeks now, which is hard to believe, but from the start, the sort of absolute red line position of the White House has been that there was no quid pro quo, that there was absolutely no suggestion that the military aid to Ukraine, this nation that had been invaded by Russia, really was very eager to get U.S. military aid, that this money from the U.S. government, the notion that it had been withheld trying to get something from Ukraine, something that the president wanted politically, that is the thing that they have denied and denied and denied from the start. And then we have the chief of staff go out yesterday and just say it. Yes, he said absolutely. We were withholding the money for that reason.
Before we play more of what Mulvaney shocked the world with there, could you help us take a step back and explain to the listeners what Mulvaney was referring to regarding what happened in 2016? He said 2016. Is it that theory about whether Ukraine rather than Russia hacked the DNC?
Right. Well, this is complicated, and part of the reason why it's complicated is that there are some theories amongst Trump supporters that just have very little evidence to support them. So, you know, everyone will remember that the collective finding of the U.S. intelligence community is that Russia interfered in the U.S. election in 2016, and they did that to help elect Donald Trump. So there are people around the president who have come to believe that, in fact, that publicly held narrative is wrong, and that in fact it was Ukraine that interfered in the election, and they did so to help Hillary Clinton. And there are a few versions of that theory that are circulating. Some relate to the information that came out during the campaign about Paul Manafort and his work in Ukraine, which was damaging to the Trump campaign at the time. And there are other versions of it, and the version that the president referenced on his phone call with President Zelensky in July and that Mick Mulvaney seemed to reference yesterday is a particularly debunked version of it. And this is a version that says that instead of Russia hacking the DNC, in fact, somehow Ukraine hacked the DNC, or perhaps Ukraine framed Russia for hacking the DNC. There is this company called CrowdStrike, which the DNC had hired, which was the first sort of outside consultant that concluded that Russia had been behind the hack of the DNC. In this theory, perhaps CrowdStrike sent the DNC server to Ukraine. The president of the United States seems to be under the impression that CrowdStrike is itself a Ukrainian company, which is not true. It's all, frankly, a little hard to even understand because it is based on so little evidence. But the sort of core of it is that Ukraine actually interfered in the election, and
on behalf of Hillary Clinton, somehow hacking the explain this, that hacking the DNC and releasing DNC emails, Democratic National Committee emails, that were extremely embarrassing to Clinton and other Democrats, was somehow supposed to help Hillary Clinton beat Trump?
Maybe, or perhaps that arranging somehow for Russia to be framed or fingered for the hack, which actually came about in a different way, hurt Trump and helped Hillary. Again, very hard to sort of piece it out. The version that involves Paul Manafort is a little easier to understand, which is that there was this story that came out during the campaign that there was this black ledger in Ukraine that showed he had been paid millions in cash. It was the reason he resigned. And there are some people, Rudy Giuliani among them, who believe that that black ledger was a forged document put out by Ukrainians to hurt the Trump campaign. Anyway, as I said, it's all very hard to follow, but the basis of it is that somehow Ukraine should be helping the U.S. government investigate what really happened in 2016. And Mick Mulvaney was suggesting that the U.S. held up military aid to an invaded ally because we wanted to hear them say, we wanted to hear Ukraine say first that they were going to help us investigate what really happened in 2016.
And just to button this down, has the Washington Post done specific fact-checking on this CrowdStrike theory? And the president did use the word, the company name, CrowdStrike, in that phone call with Zelensky saying what Trump wanted him to investigate, and the Paul Manafort ledger theory. Have you done fact-checking there and assigned it Pinocchio's or anything like that?
You know, I'm not sure what our fact checker, I suspect we have. I don't have it at the top of my head. I mean, I myself, who have been reporting on this since 2016, can tell you some of, particularly the CrowdStrike server theory is just really out there. Even Mark Meadows, the Republican congressman, who is very much a proponent of the theory that there was wrongdoing done to the Trump campaign in 2016, even he came out yesterday and said that the CrowdStrike server version of that theory, he doesn't think is worth a lot of time, that does not seem correct to him.
And yet there was the president in that phone call, according to the White House transcript, asking Zelensky to do me a favor, though, and investigate CrowdStrike by name. All right, back to the Mulvaney news conference. What he said at the end of the clip we played was that it was appropriate to withhold military aid in exchange or until until they started to investigate 2016, those things you were describing. He used the word appropriate, still unbelievable to the reporters. So ABC's Jonathan Carl asked him to confirm it again.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happened as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy. We were holding up money at the same time for, what was it, the Northern Triangle countries. We were holding up aid at the Northern Triangle countries so that they would change their policies on immigration.
Now, the Northern Triangle countries, just so the listeners are clear on what the reference is, are Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. So it's those three Central American countries that are sending so many immigrants and that whole controversy. So let's examine that part of the defense. He seems to be equating a quid pro quo for investigating Trump's personal rivals for Trump's political advancement to a quid pro quo in exchange for a policy from Northern Triangle countries that the administration believes is in the U.S. national interest. And I'm just curious if the Northern Triangle analogy struck you as apples and oranges, as it struck me.
Well, yes, and for the reason that you just described. I mean, one of the things that was interesting about that argument is, you know, that argument I feel like has gotten a bit of a test run amongst Trump supporters on Fox News within the last week or so, and then Mick Mulvaney picked it up, you know, from the White House briefing room. You know, the notion is that this is how foreign policy is done, that all of foreign policy is composed of quid pro quos, if you will. And I think there's a tiny element of that that has some resonance. You know, when you get into these very technical arguments that lawyers do about whether you could, for instance, apply bribery law to this encounter, is this a legal quid pro quo where you could actually make a case that a thing of value was exchanged for an official act?
Which is really, really important because bribery is actually in the Constitution as an impeachable offense.
Correct. It's a correct. So there is an argument that is made that, you know, foreign policy is conducted in this way, in a routine way, that there's always sort of a quid pro quo. That said, the point you made is a really good one, which is, you know, it is not typically a thing of sort of personal benefit that is being exchanged with a foreign leader in a foreign country. It's usually a policy issue that is thought to advance the national security of the United States. Now, I know that Donald Trump and Mick Mulvaney would tell you that investigating the 2016 election is a thing that is in the best interest of the country, that they believe wrongdoing was done and that it is in the nation's best interest. But there has been very little evidence put forward that there was wrongdoing done in 2016, and it also would have an enormous sort of political and personal benefit to the President of the United States if he could sort of badger Ukraine into coming up with even just declaring that they thought there might be something wrong with 2016 and that they had opened an investigation.
And here's how plainly Mulvaney stated that this, in his assertion, is a routine thing.
And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy.
There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. So the way we're parsing it here is that there is or should be an awareness of the difference between political influence, if by politics you mean trying to get another country to do something that's seen as in the U.S. national interest, and politics in the sense of trying to do something that's for the president's political campaign. Let's keep going, because while he admitted there was a quid pro quo for looking for a DNC server, he denied that there was one for investigating the Bidens. And another reporter, NPR's Ayesha Rascoe, realized that that contradicted the White House transcript of Trump's call with Ukraine's President Zelensky.
No. On the call, the president did ask about investigating the Bidens. Are you saying that the money that was held up, that had nothing to do with Biden?
No, the money held up had absolutely nothing to do with Biden. There's no question. And that was the point I made to you.
And you're drawing a distinction. You're saying that it would
there
be
were three,
wrong.
Three
to hold
factors.
Up money
again,
for the Bidens.
I was involved with the process by which the money was held up temporarily. Okay, three issues for that: the corruption in the country, whether or not other countries were participating in the support of the Ukraine, and whether or not they were cooperating in an ongoing investigation with our Department of Justice. That's completely legitimate.
Again, Mick Mulvaney. We can take some phone calls, by the way, for Rosalind Helderman, Washington Post investigations correspondent, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So there are two things in that clip that I want to understand better. One is Mulvaney just flat out contradicting the president's phone call transcript, which had both the 2016 stuff and the Bidens. Did the acting chief of staff not know about the transcript?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some parsing going on here. It's sort of acknowledgement that both the issue of 2016 and the issue of the Biden investigation were important to the president and were being used as as leverage for something else the Ukrainians really wanted, which was an actual visit to the White House. I think there's been essentially an acknowledgement from some of the other players in this situation. That they were going to have to investigate both things if they wanted to get to the White House. But Mick Mulvaney is saying only the 2016 issue had to do with this the holdup of this $400 million in aid. And, you know, I think there's more testimony and text messages and evidence to be gathered to figure out whether or not that's true.
And of course, it wasn't just the transcript in which Trump said that the whole Biden thing was one of the things that he would withhold military aid for, just as a point of reference. Trump owned asking Ukraine for that on the White House lawn in an earlier appearance.
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Bidens. It's a very simple answer. They should investigate the Bidens, because how does a company that's newly formed, and all these companies, if you look at, and by the way, likewise, China should start an investigation into the Bidens.
So there's that. But my other question is about his defense, Mulvaney's defense, of demanding that Ukraine look for the 2016 DN server because it's part of an ongoing Justice Department investigation. Now, that sounds like an official U.S. government context, not something to help the Trump campaign, unlike the distinction we were making before. But my question to you is there a Justice Department investigation of what almost everyone seems to regard and you just described as a debunked conspiracy theory?
Well, there is a Justice Department review of the origins of the Russia investigation in 2016. Bill Barr, the Attorney General, has asked a very well-respected U.S. Attorney, U.S. Attorney Durham of Connecticut, to lead a review of exactly how the original Russia investigation began in 2016. We don't have a great sense of what precisely Durham is looking at, and certainly not whether he has found anything. We do know that Durham and Bill Barr went to Italy and discussed this investigation with the Italians. We don't know whether or not they are looking at Ukraine and any kind of Ukrainian angle as part of that. What we do know about Ukraine is that after Mick Mulvaney made those comments, in which he connected this military aid issue to the Department of Justice review, the Department of Justice very quickly came out and said that if that was the case, it was news to them, to their knowledge, there was no connection between the holding up of this aid and the review they have underway. I think the Department of Justice is very, very aware that it looks extremely bad for their review and would undermine anything it might actually turn up if it turns out that it looks like their review is being, you know, led out of the White House, if it looks as though the president and his chief of staff are bullying foreign countries to put evidence forward as part of their review.
Are you saying there's evidence or that people are accusing Trump and William Barr of using the Justice Department to do the campaign's work, just as it looks like they're using Ukraine to do the campaign's work?
Well, I mean, certainly people are accusing them of that, very strongly accusing them of that. I do think that Bill Barr is sensitive to that accusation. I keep an open mind on all of these things. As I said, the U.S. Attorney Durham is a quite well-respected figure in the Department of Justice. And, you know, if he finds something that went awry in 2016, it would be worth at least hearing about that. But we don't have any idea what it is exactly he's looking at or what kind of progress he is making. He has been assigned tricky, politically charged investigations in the past and has put forward reviews in those matters that were widely applauded at the end. He was known for being very slow. So I don't think there's any expectation that Durham is going to be putting forward the results of his review anytime soon. And I think there's an understanding at the Department of Justice that having his work be as politicized, as obviously politicized as it now is because of what Mick Mulvaney said yesterday, is not in the interest of the Department of Justice.
But there's a question then from a Trump point of view, and I heard someone on Fox News last night making this argument that it's an analogy, it is analogous to the Mueller investigation. If the Mueller investigation was going on as, you know, a special appointee within the Justice Department to look at what happened in 2016, then the guy you were just talking about, appointed in the Justice Department to look at these other theories about what happened in 2016, makes it something like the Mueller investigation that we would want other countries to cooperate with while it's going on. What would a Democrat or anybody skeptical of that assertion reply to that?
Well, the Mueller investigation was, in the parlance of the Justice Department, predicated. There was actually evidence that was gathered first to show that there was a possibility of wrongdoing that needed to be investigated. If there is such a predicate for the Durham investigation, it has not been made clear by the Department of Justice. One thing that's interesting about that review is there's been some conflicting information about this, but the last time we were able to get a good handle on this at the Washington Post, it was our understanding that there was no grand jury in that matter. You know, a grand jury would be impaneled if the people conducting the review believed that they had some evidence of a possible criminal violation, and need a grand jury if you're going to issue subpoenas and really, you know, compel the production of testimony and documents. The last time we heard, this was a far more informal review where people were being requested to participate. They were being asked if they would sit for interviews, but people were not receiving grand jury subpoenas that they had to comply with. Now, you know, if they're finding something, if they believe there is something out there, it doesn't take much to go to a grand jury. Maybe that will or has already shifted. But the last time we were able to get a good answer out of that, it was still a sort of informal review and not a formal criminal investigation.
Let's take a phone call. Craig, you're on with Rosalind Helderman, Washington Post investigations correspondent. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you? And good morning.
Hey there.
Thank you so much. If it's okay with you, I was wondering if I may get your opinion about another possible impeachment offense, perhaps even more egregious. It's been reported Trump's decision to withdraw from Syria seemed out of the blue and reckless and impetuous and made without consulting his own military advisors, and it's even been said his own military was caught off guard by Trump's erratic decision. It appears Trump did not make this decision as our commander-in-chief. It appears he made it as a personal decision to benefit himself for the purpose of diverting news attention away from the impeachment proceedings, which I guess Trump himself perceives as his number one challenge to getting himself reelected. Is it possible that Trump has committed another impeachable offense? And I was wondering, what is your opinion?
Rosalind, or as a reporter, if you don't want to give your opinion, is anybody looking at it like that there?
I appreciate you rephrasing that because yes, as a reporter, I always get a little itchy when someone asks me for my opinion. I mean, look, the important thing to remember about impeachment is that there is no like statutory definition beyond high crimes and misdemeanors. So what constitutes a high crime and misdemeanor is up to the people's representatives in Congress to decide. There's all manner of things that that some Democrats have proposed are impeachable offenses, and impeachment is a political process. Partly, it is a strategic and political decision by the Democrats what they wish to pursue and what they think and what they don't wish to pursue. I mean, that's an interesting argument that the caller just made. I'm not sure I've heard that one phrased exactly that way. Although obviously, there's enormous upset in Washington on both sides of the aisle about what's been going on in Syria. There's all kinds of other issues. There's obstruction both of the Mueller investigation and of the current impeachment probe that some people believe the way the president has acted with regards to those investigations should be considered as impeachable offenses. There's the emoluments clause of the Constitution, which forbids the president from accepting payments from foreign officials. Just yesterday, we got the announcement that we'll be holding the G7 conference at the president's personal club in Florida, which is going to result in the automatic payment of money from foreign leaders directly to the President of the United States. So, you know, it's going to be for Congress to decide. And so far, what they have said in the last few weeks is they think the Ukraine matter is the most serious one, and they think it's very important to sort of focus on that in a very narrow way as part of their impeachment inquiry.
Let me follow up on the caller's question with something that maybe advances it or maybe reframes it. Hillary Clinton was on the show yesterday, and I want to replay one clip from that. I asked her, as a former Secretary of State, could she make the case that Trump is impeachable on national security grounds, not just abuse of power for his political gain, as so much of the conversation is about, but as a national security threat to the United States? And here's part of her answer.
I think that, you know, the emoluments and the obstruction of justice, all of that was kind of caught up in a, you know, back and forth about whether or not it could be considered impeachable. But when the American public, and including now even some Republicans who are expressing their concerns, and certainly members of his administration who are coming forward to testify, when it comes to a clear example of undermining national security for personal political gain and advantaging Vladimir Putin, who wants to basically control Ukraine at the expense of both American and European interests, there is no doubt in my mind that undermines national security. But then, of course, you can add on other things that are not the subject of the impeachment investigation, like this impulsive behavior with the Kurds, which certainly advantages Iran and Russia once again.
So as we run out of time, Roslyn, just real quick, how seriously is that kind of argument being taken or being made as a possible grounds for impeachment, tying Trump's actions toward Ukraine to Trump's actions toward Syria as threatening U.S. national security by giving gifts to Putin or any other way that people might put it?
You know, I have not actually heard in Congress people proposing wrapping those things together in the articles of impeachment. But what is important is that should the House impeach the president, it will be up to the Senate, which would hold a trial, whether to remove him from office, which means it will ultimately be the decision of Republicans in the Senate. And, you know, Republicans in the Senate are not pleased with this president right now. Some of them are extremely upset over the Syria decision. And it is not good timing for the president that these two things have happened at the same time, because it does damage his standing with the people who will ultimately make the decision whether to remove him from office should the House impeach him.
Rosalind Hilderman, Washington Post investigations correspondent, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.